Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and also in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. You can visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today, my guest is author Ann Lester, who has written a book about your best financial life. And I'm super excited to talk with you today. I think, Ann, there's so many great nuggets that you have picked up and developed through your career. This is going to be a great conversation.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here, Heather.
Yeah, so you know, I gave you just a teeny little introduction. I'd love for you to spend some time telling our audience more about yourself and your background and your writing and all of those great things.
Sure. Well, I have to say, I always wanted to write a book, but I thought it would be like a mystery or a thriller or something when I was a kid, because I used to like reading those. I didn't know I'd grow up to write a book like this. I spent almost 30 years working at JP Morgan Asset Management. And when I retired in 2020, my job was managing target date funds, which are the funds that many people have in their 401k plans, the ones with the number in the name, like 2040 or 2030. And so what I spent the last 20 years of my career doing there was designing, building, and managing investment strategies for people saving for retirement. So I learned a lot about what people were doing, how they did it. And I also was able to take a hard look at what I was doing because I was a terrible saver, really terrible at it. And it wasn't until I started doing some of the research for building those target date funds at JP Morgan that I started understanding why I was so terrible at saving. And so when I retired, one of the reasons I retired was to finally write the book. Except instead of a murder mystery, it was a book about how to understand why you behave the way you behave with money and what to do about it, which then turned into Your Best Financial Life.
And really, it is all that like self-awareness and knowledge and even learning about like philosophies about it and trends and what other people, either their pieces, their things with money, or their successes or their less than successes. I think that's great. So tell us a bit more about what made you think, or I guess maybe realize, that you were, in your words, a terrible saver.
Well, money, I mean, my parents used to joke about it when I was growing up, right? Money almost literally used to burn a hole in my pocket. And if I got any money, my first thought was, oh, goody, what can I spend it on? And it's funny because I joke with my parents about this now. They're both, my dad will turn 90 this year. So, it's been a lot of conversations about this, but they were born in the early 30s, you know, mid 30s. They grew up in the Depression. You know, their parents were farmers. There was just not a lot of money for either of them growing up. And the thought of teaching their children how to budget evidently never occurred to either of them. And so there was always enough money in our house growing up for whatever they said was important. And if they didn't think something was important, they said, oh, well, we don't spend money on that sort of thing, whatever it was. And if it was important, like me getting music lessons, of course there was money for it. And so the conversation about, we have this finite amount of money that we're deciding, right, to spend on. Never, if they talked about it, I didn't hear it. Let's put it that way. Although my mother's like, of course we taught you something. And I'm like, I don't really remember those conversations, Mom. But so some of it is just I wasn't taught. I think we also have natural tendencies, like just hardwired into us towards spending or saving. Like I have two kids, one is a spender, one is a saver. Like they grew up in the same household.
I have
And
those same two kids.
well, I think a lot of people do. So what I started learning, right, when I was doing the research for this product that I built, and this is back in the early 2000s, so 20 years ago now, was this whole field of behavioral economics and all of this research. I grew up studying economics. I studied economics in college. After I wanted to be a mystery writer, I then decided I wanted to be an investment banker, which is also not what most kids grow up thinking. I want to be an investment banker. I thought money was interesting, maybe because I never had any. But I started learning about the ways we behave irrationally with money. And, we can look at our lives and look at so many things that some part of your brain is going, you're going to regret that, whether it's eating the fifth Oreo or having the fourth glass of wine or staying up and binging Netflix and not wanting to get up. Like we all do this stuff. So what's wrong with us? Are we moral failures? Are we weak? Or are we just human beings who genetically, right, it was important to do things fast and not worry about the future when you were getting chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Like we were wired to behave, to be rewarded for impulse taking, like, 100,000 years ago. Well, that doesn't help us very much now that we shop on Amazon, right? So learning about behavioral economics 20 years ago let me forgive myself. I was like, oh, I'm not a moral failure or weak or a terrible person or just stupid. I just have poor impulse control and I need to figure out some rules that I can create for myself, just like we're creating for people who are going to be investing in these funds to keep me out of trouble. Oh, I can do that. And as soon as I started taking some of the blame and shame out of it, it actually became a lot easier for me to get my arms around my own spending and my own saving and take a lot of the guilt out of it, but also a lot of the overanalysis and the worrying about it. I mean, especially when you're young, and I'd say this is true for anybody maybe below 50, you kind of can set it and forget it. That becomes less true in your 40s, but certainly in your 20s and 30s, you should just be saving and investing money and not paying too much attention to it for your retirement. Like it's going to grow. Don't worry about it.
Be consistent with it.
Yeah, be consistent. Consistency is the key. Consistency is everything when you're investing for the long term. And, both because of our own wiring and our own sort of loss aversion and greed, and those are also distinct. Like there are a couple of really distinct behavioral things that get into our heads or are in our heads when we think about money. And one is this present bias, right? Today is more important than anything that will happen in the future, which is why it's hard to save for the future because it's going to happen later. Just like staying up late and watching Netflix. Well, waking up is tomorrow's problem. I want to watch this right now. I want to finish this book, whatever the thing is. Another one is, really disliking losing money. Like we hate losing money. It hurts.
Right. If you get
Winning
nothing
feels
for it.
good, but losing hurts a lot of more, and it makes us more fearful than we should be about taking financial decisions in general, and really worried when the market goes down. And sometimes that causes us to not invest for the long term or sell when we shouldn't, right? So these behavioral biases can really trip us up. And again, for me, understanding that they exist is key to figuring out how you're going to say, okay, I know my brain wants to do this. What can I do to not put myself in a position where I'm going to fall into that trap?
And it's that the stories that you tell yourself,
Right.
right? And really who you are and being able to really like kind of come to terms with that. Because also going the totally restrictive side, as with everything, when you pile on a whole bunch of restrictions, you said the word rules, and that's guidelines and and kind of guardrails, some rules, some like things to sort of live by. You know, building that up over time is important instead of trying to go all the way to the super restrictive because you are likely going to just notice what you had to give up. And that can be really discouraging too.
Someone once said to me that you need to understand the difference between sacrifice and suffering.
Right.
And it's
Right.
okay to sacrifice a little bit. You don't want to suffer.
Yeah.
And I think about that sometimes when I think about, for me, it's more food than money these days, but both, right? Like what do I feel like is a bit of a sacrifice? Like, is it a sacrifice not to have dessert? Well, yeah, maybe a little bit. Am I gonna suffer because I'm not eating dessert? Of course not. I'm not hungry, right?
Yeah. Is it a sacrifice to skip buying that new bag or new shoes or insert whatever, right? And or is it truly, are you going to suffer from it? Now, suffering from not being able to go to the grocery store, that's different than you know, other impulse buys or extravagances in our lives that we bring in.
Absolutely. I think about it like everybody has to eat. Are you shopping at the absolute thriftiest grocery store you can find? Or are you dining out in a restaurant that has tablecloths and candles every night? Like they're both food, but they're going to cost you a very different amount of money. And, you know, I think it's healthy and I think a very good exercise to get curious about yourself and how you value money and what money means to you. And I think, again, a lot of people, because if they think about money at all you're generally aware of is that I don't have enough or I don't have as much as I want, or there's all these things that I wish were different. And so it tends to be something that's not pleasurable. I read an article in I don't know, a couple weeks ago about a couple that occasionally, like once a year, they would buy a lottery ticket and go out on a date and just talk about what they would do with the money so that not all of their conversations about money were like tense and angry and like frustrated. And they gave themselves permission to like fantasize a little bit. And I think we can do that even, you know, without fantasizing about winning the lottery, but just like, wow, you know, what are so, can I get curious about how I'm spending my money?
Yeah, I think that behavioral side of things and that empowerment for what you can do for yourself is really how to have long-term success. But with that, let's take a short break and we will be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor at Ellen Becker Investment Group, and my guest today is Ann Lester, author of a fascinating book called Your Best Financial Life: Save Smart Now for the Future You Want. Ann, tell us a bit more about what led you to write this book, and we can talk about some of the different topics that you cover too.
Thanks so much, Heather. I wrote this book because I was terrible at saving and figured out a whole bunch of ways to help myself, but also help many other people in my former job, which was managing money for millions of people in their mutual funds in, for retirement. And what I realized was that there's not a lot out there written for people in their 20s and 30s about finances. I think most financial books are written for people who are older, who have accumulated some money and are trying to figure out what to do as they get closer to retirement. And I think there are a lot of terrific books out there for that audience, but there's a little bit of a gap. And what I know is that if you can start saving early, if you can start putting in place some practices early in your career, it will make saving for retirement almost, I don't want to say painless, but it will make it a lot easier. And I also know, you know, I'm a mom. I've got two kids who are going to be 25 and 27 later this year. A lot of people in their 20s and 30s don't understand the consequences of decisions with money that they don't even know they're making, right? They don't understand. I think it's very hard to understand the consequences of something in 30 years' time when you're in your 20s or 30s. You're like, we're just not, our brains aren't wired to help us think like that. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was to help bring some of that to life and hopefully a kind of lighthearted and non-anxiety producing way.
Right. And it's that That gratification that we want as soon as we can, right? And so being able to wrap your brain around what does delaying or planning do for what your future self is going to appreciate,
Right.
right? It's hard to have that patience. And I think too, I love to work with people in their 20s and 30s because it's also bringing them through some concepts like this, like the importance of setting something aside for way down the road. And the value of that being invested, likely, right, with no guarantees on performance, but the value of having something in the market for that long.
Well, I think compound returns are something that maybe you've learned the formula to in high school or college, but I think it's really difficult to get a visceral understanding for what it does. You can do the math and say if you get a 7% return on average, and you will never get 7% every year. You may never get an actual 7%, but let's just say on average you get 7%, which I think most people would say is a touch conservative. Your money will double every 10 years, right? So a dollar that you save in your 20s is going to be worth at least, $2 in your 30s, at least $4 in your 40s, at least $8. I mean, it just goes up geometrically. And if you can imagine putting that dollar away day after day and it doubling, right? It is almost magic, right? What this will do. And like you said, there are no guarantees, but I do think, assuming that you'll get roughly a 7% return is a reasonable thing to assume. And if you start saving when you're 20, 21, 22 years old, 10% of your salary in a retirement plan, you're going to have an absolutely delightful retirement.
Without probably changing too much moving
No,
forward is what
no, no,
your
no.
studies have showed.
Yep. If you get used to putting that 10% away for that, you're fine. You get a raise, you just increase your savings rate, and you're going to be just fine. And the challenge is, of course, most people don't start there because there's plenty of stuff to spend your money on when you get out of school or get your first job. And retirement is often not on the top of the list, like, an apartment, paying off student loans, buying a car, right? We can talk about the list of stuff. So
Traveling and all the things that
all the good
come
stuff too, right? Like you've
with
been waiting to live your life, and now you finally can.
and you finally have a paycheck,
Yeah.
right? It feels like it's been forever, especially if you've gone through, say, a 4-year degree or graduate school or any of the other things that people add on. With that said, I know in your book you covered some tips on like ways to kind of hack your brain. We all love the hack. We all love hacks. So, do you want to share anything about how to make it a little easier to save? Like, how do we trick
So
ourselves?
I'd say two things, right? Two big ideas here. The first idea is that if you want to save more money, you have to try to do two big things. One is make it a little easier to save, and the other is make it a little harder to spend. And sadly, it's really easy to spend your money, and it's actually kind of hard to save it, right? Partly because of our brains, right? Our brains want what we want right now. But it's also, aside from if you get signed up, if your employer offers a 401k plan and you get automatically enrolled, that's like easy because you didn't have to do anything. But every other act of saving takes action on your part that you actually actively have to figure out where you're going to save it. What do you save it into? Like you have to do some work. And there's decisions to make and choices. And making those decisions and choices starts feeling difficult. And what if I make a mistake? And what if I need the money? And then it's easy not to do.
It's
So
paralyzing.
it's paralyzing. So first of all, if you've got a 401k plan at work and you've been enrolled, that's phenomenal because that's the easiest thing you can do is to stay there and bump up your savings there. If you're having trouble saving enough money for your future. And again, I'm going to throw out some numbers that are scary, but most people should be saving at least 10 to 15% of their salaries towards retirement and for other goals in life. And if you didn't start saving in your 20s, I'm going to say right now, you probably should be saving 15 to 20%. Now, those are so high, right? And if especially if you're like the average American today, saving around 4 to 5% of your money, getting to that 20% number seems impossible. And it will be if you try to do it all at once, unless you are living a super extravagant lifestyle, which I doubt most people are. So the easiest way to raise your savings rate is to promise yourself today that you will save at least half of every raise going forward. And this is especially true if you're in your 20s and 30s because you're at that part of your career where you can expect to get more raises. And what you want to do is stay off, here's a technical term, the hedonic treadmill, right? I call it consumption creep, right? You want to stop your spending increasing in line with your salary because then you'll never save any money. It's really
That's
painful to
super
cut
true.
back though today. Like if I asked you to say, well, stop spending 10%, you'd look at me like I was totally crazy. It's impossible. You can't do it. But how about if you think you might get a 5% raise next year? Can you save 2% of that or 3% of that? Well, I know you had plans for that money, but dial it back a little bit. You probably can save that. Okay. You just bumped up your savings rate by 2%. Over the course of 4 or 5 or 6 years, you probably can get your savings rate up to something closer to that 10 or 15% that we were talking about, or maybe even 20. You just have to be methodical and anchor your future expectations to be a little less high than they might be today. That's the most important thing you can do. And then we can talk about a whole bunch of other ways to think about, well, what if you want to actually start saving a little more money right now, today, right? What are some ways you can stop spending? One of the easiest things to take a look at, and I was kind of shocked when I did this myself, is your subscriptions.
Yes, the subscriptions. Then my subscriptions will pop into my brain at times when I have no chance of looking into them and thinking about whether or not that's still signed up for, or really digging deep into, where my motivations are for still holding that subscription. Easy one is like the gym, but the sneakies, right? The sneaky ones are like anything on our phones that
Well,
makes us money.
if you've got an iPhone, you can go into the subscriptions thing and then you can actually look at them. And I was shocked when I went in there and I was like, I'm still paying for that. I'm still paying. Like there were three things in there I had no idea I was still paying for. And I hadn't used them in at least 2 or 3 years. So, I mean, they were all $2.99 or four, and they weren't horrifically expensive, but boy, do they add up, right? They really
It's
do.
and it's so much the principle of it that there's something you're paying for that like you just said, you had forgotten that it was even a fee coming out of your account.
Then there are the things on your credit card that you have to go and like compare 3 or 4 credit card bills and like look at them to see them showing up, or maybe even a year's worth if they're showing up annually, right? Which is the other really sneaky one because you don't see them every month, right? So the non-recurring, because it was a good deal to say annual because you saved 20%, right? Well, not so good because it's not in your face all the time. So a subscription cleanse, I think, is a really, really useful thing to do. The average American spends $200 a month on subscriptions. That's over $1,000 a year. And according to a survey that Chase did recently, 3 out of 4 Americans have forgotten at least one subscription they've had in the last year. So it's a good place to start. Something that I also think about is there's a lot of sort of fear of missing out, FOMO stuff with, well, I'll go back to the gym next week. What if I want to watch a show on Hulu? What if I want to, I know I haven't watched that for 9 months, but the new season of Ted Lasso is coming out. Maybe, and it's just like, why am I paying for these subscription services, right? They'll let you sign up again if you cancel. Like it's okay. They're none of these are irreversible decisions. You can sign right back up again. So some of this fear, right, or conveniences that you think you can't live without. Well, what if you try an experiment? Get curious again. I love the word curious, right? Get curious. What if you cut one of these off? Like maybe it would be fine.
And even set a time period for yourself,
Yeah.
right? Like let me give this up for a month. That could be subscriptions or any other kind of spending. Or let me give this up for 2 weeks, right? Or I'm not going to restock that in my house for a month or for 3 months or what have you. That's how we got used to, and this is kind of silly, but I wanted to stop buying so many paper towels. And I said, you know what? We've got cloth rags. We've got many different things that we can use. How about let's just give it up for like 6 weeks, and we can go back to it if we really, really miss it. And we really only have a, we just use a very little paper towels. And it's again, silly example, but a real one.
It's highlighting a really great point again about our brains and our wiring, which is that we, and this goes back to consumption creep or that hedonic treadmill, right? We immediately get used to whatever we've got. And then we think that it's a necessity. And giving it up is painful. And there's another thing where we think the present will be permanent. So if we've gotten used to it and we think we need it, then we can't imagine not having it. And then if we imagine giving it up, it's like, well, then we could never get it back. And it's like, none of that is true.
Know. Well,
None of that
I
is
feel
true.
like inside my head right now, and I am not in my 20s or 30s, I'll just tell you. But let's take a short break and we can get into more of this fascinating money mindset stuff when we come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is author Ann Lester. And we are talking about your best financial life and how to get there and how to live it. And you've been great about giving us all sorts of things to think about when it comes to spending and saving. You know, if we want to talk about some of the bigger things, like you mentioned a couple times, what I call it lifestyle creep. You called it the hedonic treadmill. You know, I think of that as, you know, how free I am with my spending at the farmer's market, right? I'm used to being able to get what I want there. There's bigger things in our lives that come in. And so what are some tips on when some bigger kind of luxury item, you know, is what I think was mentioned in your book. When that comes up, how can we look at those?
I think it's really helpful to, I keep coming back to the word curious, like get curious about why you want that thing. And of course, like I said, money burns a hole in my pocket. I've got a lot of those things in my, like the house I live in is maybe one of those things. But I think a really good question, you know, place to start is, and this may be for, maybe more for the ladies, maybe it's for the guys, like what's that shiny thing that you want to buy? If it's an item of clothing, or a pair of shoes or a fancy handbag, like what's the, or for a guy, maybe it's a new tool. We've got a garage full of them.
Could
like
be an
that.
Apple clothing and shoes as well.
Yeah, or right, depending on
right.
My husband is more for the tools than the clothing, I have to say. But like, what's the thing that you got this, like, I want that thing, right? Can you actually play a movie that's not a total fantasy about how you're going to use that thing? And how often you're going to use that thing. And is that thing part of your daily life or routine life? Or is it that, well, if only, and this is for the ladies, maybe if only I had that pair of shoes, I could imagine that I would. And then you go off in some total like silly, like when I go to Paris the next time, I'm going to be wearing these beautiful shoes at some fan, you know, no, you're not. You're not going anywhere. You don't go to restaurants like that. You don't even like the food there. Why are you fantasizing that you're going to have this experience, right? So that's a reality check. Do you really, really, can you really actually use this thing? Or maybe it's a fancy piece of cooking gear, which is what I fall for too. Like, yes, yeah, so I need another braising pot. You know, like, no, I don't.
Right.
Whatever the thing is, like really, when are you going to use it and how? And how often? And maybe make an exception for, you know, special occasion events like your child's wedding. Maybe you give yourself a pass on that one. My son just got engaged, so I think about that. Second thing you should do is put it on a list and sit with it a little while. Put it on a list and sit with it for a while. Is it an impulse buy? Yeah. If you didn't know you need it, you probably don't need it.
Yeah.
Right. So.
That's
so
like a hack with the Amazon cart.
Yes.
Don't check out right away. Wait
mm-hmm,
a few days
mm-hmm.
and only check out on Sundays.
I think that's true
week.
For all online shopping. I'm glad you said that Sunday thing, because another hack I think about is I only let myself do online shopping like on a certain day, sitting in a certain place. And that's particularly bad for people, maybe not so much in your neck of the woods, but a lot of people around here commute by train or commute by bus. And you do not want to be sitting on the train going flick, flick, flick through your feed and going, oh, I need that, I need that, I need that, because you're bored and there's not much you can do, right? So it's a very dangerous, I hope nobody's doing that while they're driving, but it's a very dangerous thing to be doing any kind of online shopping without a list and without a purpose, right? Because those impulse buys just get you. So I think those are really, really useful things to do. And then honestly, if you put that thing on a list, if you thought about it, if you visited it, if it's a thing in a physical store, that's another great hack. Actually, if you're trying to slow your spending down at all, just stop doing online shopping. Make yourself go to the store. The merchants will be grateful. And it's actually kind of hard and inconvenient, and you have to like hunt around for things. And maybe you don't need it after all if it's a real pain to get.
Right. If it's not worth the hunt and the leaving your house for it.
It's not worth it, period. Right?
Yeah.
Make yourself try something on, touch it physically so you really can decide if it's really what you want. Because guess what? A lot of us buy stuff online that we think we want, we get it, and it's like, oh, it's not that good. And then it's a pain to return, right? So this stuff piles up. I just bought a pair of shoes online on Amazon that I did want. I did the research. I looked it up. I thought about it. I followed all those rules. They don't fit very well. And I forgot to return them in the window. And now I'm stuck with these shoes because I forgot to return them. So,
And check the window. The return window has
yeah.
changed. For sure. Yeah, I think that's great. I think any of that stuff to remember, to it also helps you like really commit to it. And making sure like something that we talk about a lot is, aligning with like your values. So that's part of that, does this align with my values? Does it align with my goals? Now, these are more in the moment decision pieces. And there's also those longer term, like being able to really make those decisions based on what you want in the future. But
I think that's
when that future is 50 years from now for younger people, or 50 years from now for people who are going to live a long life, that can be a challenge too.
it's so important. And again, just the theme is slow yourself down.
Put some like speed bumps in there just to disrupt.
Yep, that's the most important thing you can do for yourself.
And that disruption, like disrupting our habits, right? That's another piece that goes towards change, is that you have to be able to disrupt those habits. So, like you said, if you're on a commute or you have to wait for your picking up your kid from soccer practice and you're, doing online shopping on your phone because it's just fills the time. Gotta find something else. Gotta get yourself a book,
Yeah, exactly.
to read during those times. In fact, maybe a book called
Yeah,
"Your
well, there you go. I love that. I
Life
love
by Ann
that.
Lister."
Sounds
With
great.
that, we'll take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll hear more from Ann. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor, and my guest today is author Ann Lester. And we've been talking about all these great topics and tips and mindset and behavioral economics things in your book. Now, Ann, one thing when I had read your book, I noticed and would like you to talk about your acronym STASH, STASH, and acronyms and things like that that are easy to remember. I love that. So if you could share with the listeners what is Stash and why is it helpful, why is it important?
So I talk about how to build your retirement stash, and there are 5 steps to it, one per letter. And sometimes people are surprised to find out that the first step in the retirement stash is save for a rainy day. And they're like, well, that's not about retirement. But if you don't have emergency savings, when that terrible thing happens that makes you just go, ah, whether it's a car accident, whether it's, somebody losing a laptop or, a health emergency or, the worst, losing your job, right? You need to have an emergency savings fund. And most financial services professionals would recommend 3 to 6 months. That's what I do as well. Building up that savings pool helps keep everything else on track. If you don't have emergency savings, you might dip into your 401k, you might run up more credit card debt, you really risk derailing yourself. So, first thing you should be building up is emergency savings. So, that's the S. The T is tax-aware savings. So that's your IRA, that's your 401k. That's how you build long-term wealth for retirement. So if you're just starting out, you want to maybe be splitting what you're saving for your emergency savings fund and your retirement until you get to that 3 to 6 months in your emergency savings and until you've at least gotten all of the match from
Yeah.
your employer. You want to get the free money, right? If your employer offers a 401k and you get something called a match, for instance, they put in half of all the money you put in until you get to 5 or 10% of your salary, that's free money. And that's the best present you can get from anybody. So you want to get all that match. Now, after you've got your emergency savings fund built up and after you're getting all the match, the next thing I recommend is that you assess your budget. That's the A. And start paying down high interest rate debt. You want to wait until you've got your emergency savings and your retirement fund starting to build up before you do that, though, because if you don't have emergency savings and you hit a pothole, you're just going to run that debt right back up. So that doesn't help. Maybe you max out your credit cards. Maybe you have to start skipping loan payments. Like you can get into real financial trouble. And the reason I say to start saving in your 401k if you get the match is you want to get the free money. Get the free money. Pay down those high interest rate debts. I think something above 7 or 8%, which sadly now is more and more of people's debt, that's not secured by a house. I'm not talking about your mortgages now. I'm talking about high interest rate student loans. I'm talking about credit card debt. I'm talking about maybe car loans that are above 8 or 9%. You want to see if you can get those paid down as quickly as possible. And then after you do that, you want to turn to the fourth letter, STAS again. And that is stay the course and get your retirement savings up to that 10 to 15% that we talked about earlier, which is the amount most people need to be saving at least to be able to retire in their mid-60s. So you've done the S. Save for a rainy day. You've done the T, tax-aware savings. You've done the A, assess your budget and pay down debt. You've done the second S, stay the course. And what's the last one, the H? Have fun.
I love that one.
Right? Then you should be saving for the fun stuff and just enjoying life more. So that's the stash.
That's great. I think that really steps you through what's important, right? And it's ways to think about how to have that relationship with money. You know, assessing the budget too, you know, in addition to paying down debt allows you to see, you know, what's left over that maybe I'm not putting to use anywhere yet. And then you can figure out what that means. Maybe it's a slightly higher emergency fund. Maybe it's actually more for some bigger goal that's not quite retirement, right? Buying a house or saving for somebody else's education, or that big milestone birthday trip that you know is coming up.
I think those are all fabulous things to be doing. And I think it's important. I always think about money as the money is not the goal. The money is the means to the end. And the more you can be really confident about your ends and what you're trying to accomplish, the easier the money side becomes.
Right. And I think another piece too is that with that staying the course, you know, we can also watch other people making decisions that are different from ours. Right. And so you mentioned fear of missing out. So just things like that, right? And comparison seeds of joy, right? I mean, all those things like that all comes to that staying with that bit of discipline. Because you see this bigger holistic picture.
One of the questions I get asked sometimes is it harder to save today than it was? And I am technically a boomer when I was your age. Well, A, I stunk at savings, but I think it is harder to save money now. I think people starting out, their dollars don't go as far for super big ticket items like a house. And there's so much more out there that makes us want to spend than there was. It's just so much easier to spend money today and to have aspirational things in our face that I think just make it easy to spend money. And I think the more aware you can be that these temptations are out there, and the more self-aware you can be about yourself and your relationship with money, the easier it is to put What I always like to remember when I took my kids when they were little to birthday parties and bowling alleys, they'd put those bumper guards in, which I love because I'm a terrible bowler.
Yep, same.
And those bumper guards are the way I think about all this stuff with our finances, right? What are the bumper guards you can put in for your financial life that will help keep you on track for your goals?
I think that's incredible. You know, just with all the things that we talked about, and I agree with you. I think with social media and you know, targeted ads and influencers getting paid when you can't even realize they're getting paid to promote their these products from companies. It's definitely, you know, you have to, you're the only one that cares about yourself, right? You're the one that's going to be the best one to care about yourself and your own future. So, you know, with that, Anne, I just want to thank you so much for this time together. And if you've got a way that if people had questions and like where to find your book, you know, how could somebody find you, find your work, that
Yeah,
sort of thing?
thank you. You can find me at my website, which is annlester.com, Ann with an E, ANNELESTER.com. I'm on social media and on all the social media platforms. My handle is SaveSmartWAnn. And I'd love to hear from you. So you can go on my website and send me an email that way. And you can find my book at all everywhere books are sold.
That's great. I love that. Well, thank you again so much. I've loved today's topic. You know, just to remind the audience that Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and you want to learn more about Ellen Becker Investment Group and check out our upcoming events, you can visit ellenbecker.com or call the office at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.